It's here. Peloton's best offer of the season. Get up to $300 off accessories when you purchase a Peloton tread. Choose from accessories like a heart rate monitor, non-slip grip dumbbells, yoga blocks, and more. If you've been looking for a sign to join Peloton, this offer gives you everything you need to get going. Hurry. Peloton's best offer of the season is here, but not for long. Visit onepeloton.com to learn more. All access membership separate. Limited time offer cannot be combined with other offers. See additional terms at onepeloton.com.
There's only one review of the rings, only one that can bend the fan base to its will, and we do not share power. Welcome back, everyone, to the third episode of the Review of the Rings, and today we are going to be reviewing episode 4 of The Rings of Power, or to give it its full title, The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. Please feel free, if you're watching on YouTube, subscribe and like. Really helps the show out if you're on podcast, if you're listening on there, you know, follow us on the whatever you do on your SoundCloud or your, you know, your whatever your other things are where you get
Spotify,
your podcasts from.
Apple, Spotify, Google, Apple, all Google, those. Yep.
All them places. I'm Cam Clark. I'm here as always with Kel Malone. Hi, Kel.
What's up?
Nothing much. And our details, if you're watching on YouTube, are on the screen. If you want to contact us about anything, like if you don't like the show, which, you know, yeah, well, there's a few comments about that. If you really like it, please let us know. Anything you want to see us do, definitely, absolutely, drop us a line and we'll see where we can accommodate that. If you're not watching us on YouTube, our details are in, I think, the description on the podcast. Cool. So, So we're at The Great Wave is this kind of subtitle of episode 4. I've already written a review for this, so Kel, you may have a vague idea of what my thoughts are in this episode. I have no idea what you think of this one at all yet, because we haven't discussed it once since the show aired.
We haven't, so...
And we always start with non-spoiler sort of reactions and grades, and then we'll jump into a bit more specifics for people that have already watched the episode. So, Kel, we always start with you. How did you find episode 4?
How did I find episode 4? Well, it's both... I would say it's both a benefit to have my amount of knowledge and a detriment, because I don't have as much as you. So there's a lot of things that I do get. Of course, we didn't even mention Isildur last episode, but you know, you definitely see some foreshadowing with him. Anyone that knows the movies at least should know who the hell that guy is, and the
unless you weren't paying attention,
right? And the fact that he and his father are about to leave Numenor. If you know some things, you can kind of, like what you were talking about, foreshadowing, and I don't know about the time compression and how that will affect some of this.
Yeah, I mean, we've got 5 seasons
upcoming things
to go.
So,
that's the way we have to look at it. So I think where we end up with these characters at some point will be closer to where we meet them at the prologue of the Fellowship of the Ring.
Right.
But that will be like kind of the end.
Oh yeah, that's way in the future.
So,
but
say I've got a lot of go till then, but I absolutely totally appreciate what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, and then of course, hearing a little bit more about the
the kind of demigods.
There you go. So you get a little bit more of them, but with some of my lack of first and second age knowledge, there's a lot of things that I felt like I was just kind of missing. A lot of things dealing with Numenor's deeper history. I know more about its future, so to speak, than its biggest legends than I do some of the more nuanced things. So I feel like I may have missed out on some of the appreciation that you have.
Yeah.
But overall, a really good, solid episode. I really appreciated Galadriel getting her. I won't use that word, but getting smacked down a bit. You know, she was dropped a peg or two by the Queen Regent and by the heir in exile. I forget his name. The vagabond, the guy she was came to the Halbrand. There you go. He also helps knock her down a peg or two, which is good, guys. That's character development for everyone that was you know, looking at her as one, a Mary Sue. No, because she's thousands of years old, so she's had time to hone skills. But for those that were right in saying, hey, even Cam and I looked at like some of the first scenes, we're like, eh, Amazon, you could have done, we know what you wanted to do, but you could have done better.
Yeah.
This is them doing better. She's got some flaws. Her pride gets in her way more than just, I must, you know, attack Sauron. This is throwing away the weight of her name, throwing away the weight of her race, and it didn't work. You know, they were like, who cares? Our tree hasn't cried yet. So I appreciate that. I hope people are sticking around and giving it a chance to stretch its legs. Despite some other minor things like the sea is always right, that is some really lame writing. Like that, just that phrase felt so... there could have been a better way to write it.
I think it works, and I'll tell you why. Because there's one of these Valar is basically the Poseidon of Tolkien Legendarium Ulmo, right? And he has always been one of the most active in terms of helping men and elves, you know. So the Numenoreans have a specific reverence for him, and he is an actual entity that can control the sea at will, kind of thing, if you like. Okay. So... well, control it well. Sometimes it gets out of his control. That's the way Tolkien, you know, describes it. Sometimes even he can't control the power that's in the oceans. Do you know what I mean? They're wild and,
right,
you know, all that sort of stuff. But he can help people out. So I guess they kind of would worship him in some ways as because they're a mariner culture. Do you know what I mean? They're all about sailing and boating. It's almost like praise the sea because it's a sentient thing.
That's fine. The being with it's the literal phrase. The sea is. It could have been something more along trust the sea or trust the. There could have been a better way to word that same sentiment. I'm not against them having that type of motto or sentiment. It was literally just the physical words. The sea is always right. It doesn't sound as epic as you expect something in Middle Earth, you know, Tolkien's world. So that's my only kind of
We take it back to something like Battlestar Galactica, it's kind of there. And so say we all. But that was better. Yeah.
Yeah, that fits, you know. Say we all.
So,
you know,
I can get what you're saying. I get the sentiment behind it, but I can see how the actual wording
it feels
of
a
it
little
maybe
yeah.
could have been better. Okay.
Other than that, man, solid. What did you end up grading it though, Cam? I didn't catch that part in your review.
A++. I graded it at, so that kind of gives you a bit of a hint as to where I'm going with it. So that I thought this was possibly, you know, one of the best episodes of TV I've seen all year. I think there was so much in this that there was actually things that made me genuinely emotional in this episode, which I think, you know, even some of the best episodes of the final season of Better Call Saul didn't quite hit those heights for me. Now, what I'd said in my review is I'm not saying this will, because that's currently for me the best show this year, right, was Better Call Saul's finale.
Right, right.
I'm not saying The Rings of Power will be at that level, but that episode was at that level for me.
Well, before you go on how it earns the A+, let me give mine real quick. Like I said, I think I'm missing out on some of that stuff. So there's a very, very solid episode here. But for me, it was kind of like episode 2 more than, or God, I can't even remember all of the grades. It's somewhere in between a B plus, A minus. It's solid. It's good. It's I enjoy the stuff with Elrond and Durin, of course. We'll get into all that a little bit later, but yeah, somewhere between a B plus, A minus. I could probably lean on an A minus if I gave another episode an A or anything like that, you know? So
yeah. I understand.
But why does it earn an A++ from you before spoilers?
It may be easier for me to explain this for those that have seen it when we get to the spoiler section.
Oh, okay.
So I'll try and do my best. But for me, there's a lot of foreshadowing in this episode, and I do appreciate that some of it will be very obvious, right? That anybody who's got even a vague understanding of the lore, if all you've ever done is watch the Lord of the Rings films once before, maybe not. Maybe you won't even pick up some of the more obvious stuff. I get that. You know, that's you know, you're hardly a mega fan, though, you know. So, you know, you're going to have to give it time to see if they explain these things. But there's also a lot of subtle bits of foreshadowing in there that only the super kind of nerds would pick up on. And a lot of little hints to backstory as well that only the kind of the Tolkienites, if you like, that have really kind of get into the lore would pick up on and spot. You know, so for example, there's a few moments that made me emotional because I know the story behind where they come from. And you might think it was, if you don't know that lore well enough, you might just think, oh, that was quite a good scene, but you wouldn't get the same out of it that I would. So I totally appreciate that. But for me, this was like, this was the episode that won me over. I'm hooked on this show now, you know, as a mega Tolkien fan. I really do think the writers get it. I think they really are fans and they're trying to do, they're never going to be able to adapt it perfectly. We always do that. It just, even more so, I mean, Lord of the Rings was never adapted perfectly.
No, not
and
at all.
And there's still people complain about a lot of things in that. And then there's some hold it up as that's the canon that you have to stick to, and it really was.
It's not. It's a Hollywood thing, guys.
Lots of little things. I mean, just to one of the more major things is, they, for example, they make Aragorn in Lord of the Rings a reluctant king, right? Mm-hmm. In the books, that is not the case at all. He's always working towards that eventual destiny, right? So, I mean, just to give an example. So, I think for me, just the kind of nerdy side of it, I really felt like they got it. And I'm also, like you said about Galadriel, I was a bit critical of it. It wasn't so much that I was like, oh, they've ruined Galadriel's character, right? I'd never thought that for a second, because if you look at the backstory described about her, she was a bit of a rebel, she was a bit of a warrior, and she was, you know, an older and kind of Feanorian blood, which are usually a bit prideful and sometimes make a lot of hardships for themselves that they could avoided by being a bit different. And I think this was the week I finally kind of understood how they're trying to give her an arc, and they're making her that almost Feanorian type of way. And that she's going to have to change her thought process, you know, to become the Galadriel that we see that actually survives right through and is quite wise in the Third Age. We've got all the rings to go and all that getting involved in it as well. And eventually when we get to that point. So, you know, we're not even there yet. And I think as much as, like, I'll go into it in more detail, but we did get to meet the character Adar this week, who was teased at the end of last episode, and I was kind of like, oh, am I going to like this? Am I not going to like it? And I was quite surprised that I was really did like it. And I think they teased, I don't think they'll ever come out and admit this, but I think they're teasing that this is an actual character from the backstory, because there's a lot of things that make sense. And a lot of, you know, really big fans like me have already picked up on this and think, we think it's this person. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Now, I don't think they'll have the rights to name that person, but if it's a cool just nod to the fans, they don't necessarily have to do that. In fact, there's only one character, or one or two characters that this person would have to meet that would rule that out, because they would recognise them. Do you know what I mean? Okay. Most of the characters that would recognise them are all dead now, or went back to the West. So it's interesting. It might be, you know, not the way it's going, but I just saw the attention to detail.
Misdirection.
And then when we add in, I thought the music and the visuals all worked so well from that kind of opening dream sequence. Which was probably the heaviest bit of foreshadowing that was in the episode, to the kind of subtle political machinations that we see happening. I won't go into detail again on what they are. And then the scenes with Elrond and Durin, again, and Khazad Dûm was the best. I thought that the way they cut into that with, there was one scene with the elves where they then just, you know, it's a quite a dramatic and action scene. It's all done in slow motion. And then they cut straight into a singing scene within Khazad Dûm. So the cinematography is so well done, you know.
They did another smooth transition into the sea trials as well.
Yeah.
They had an interesting transition there from the from what happens in the mines.
You talked about, this is before we get into spoilers, so you talked about you weren't too happy with the CGI scenes in the boat, scenes in the previous episode.
Still rough.
What did you think? Still think it's rough?
Still rough.
That,
and
you know, when you have the back shot and you see the ships and the scenes in the background.
It's even, I don't even think they've got much actual water spray there. I think a lot of the water spray was even CGI. If not, then something with the way they're compositing the shots made the splash, like the literal water splashing up, instead of, say, having sprayers down at the bottom out of camera frame. I mean, there's lots of things that you can do, but it's enough to be distracting for someone like me, but it's not enough to ruin it. And for people like you, I guess it doesn't even register. So
people like me, I've heard that a couple of times this week in terms of discussing the Rings of Power online with people.
Not in relation to your visual acuity for detail.
Wasn't related to that, but you know, people like me seems to be people that are, I don't know, we're in some sort of campaign at the moment, a political campaign to promote the Rings of Power, and that we can't really possibly like it because that's not an objective, you know, it's objectively bad and not subjectively bad to some people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even reading a online big fantasy and guy, and it's good.
How poor some of the arguments are. Like, I would understand if people would really, like, occasionally you'll get someone that has a really good point and can explain it. But most of the criticisms I'm seeing is people are simply not able to articulate what it is that they're trying to say that's wrong. It's woke. How is it woke? What's woke about it?
Yeah.
If you don't know, you don't know. You know, kind of thing. They won't say, because I don't think they actually fully understand it themselves. They're following, jumping onto a bandwagon.
It's just like someone in a comment from a video Manny and I talked about, it was, I finally got them to admit, at the very, very least, within this Rings of Power series, that elves mixing with humans, which we do know happen. One person insisted that the, like, three or four times Tolkien mentions it, it's the only times elves would have ever messed with humans. I'm like, he didn't write the entire history of the whole population. So someone did finally
mention it. Are the times where those unions have resulted in children?
That matters. But I was just saying, you know, is it impossible for some flung off elf group to have had a dude or a chick mate with a human that had darker skin, and that resulted in the one elf so far we've seen that's not white? And then I love when people said race switching. I'm like, which formerly, at least on screen, white character is now not white? Because Elrond, Galadriel,
on screen before, and even then, you could argue that wouldn't be relevant anyway, because this is not a direct sequel to the Peter
prequel.
Jackson
like,
movies.
Like I said, as far as what we've seen on screen.
It's the same
screen,
story,
so.
It's a different adaptation.
Exactly.
And
so
they're not
licensed
to use the same designs that were created
specifically
for the movie.
It's fine. I mean, people are gonna. And to those that have legitimate issues with it, great. You know, no one's talking about you, but hit dogs do holler is some saying that we've got here in the U.S., meaning that if you say something and someone feels offended, it might be because you feel attacked for a reason. And I'm not saying we're attacking you, and just that's how you might feel. We're just saying it's not a bad thing to have a non-white elf, especially if you haven't change something that people have seen before. And I'm not even against changing some things that people have seen before. There's a time, a place, a context, but
so. I mean, in general, I agree, but I don't look at the Rings of Power and see wokeness. I don't see that. I mean, I can see that in some, I won't mention any specific names, so I don't want to give anyone ammunition, But I can see elements of that in some shows and movies from various different franchises, but I just don't really see it in this show at the moment, I have to say.
I think there's a really touch genuine. On, yeah, I would say there was, at least at the beginning, a feel of a touch of, you know, let's make sure Galadriel cannot have any flaw but being too devoted. But we see that they actually have built on that and corrected some, and shown her to get knocked down a peg.
She's really flawed.
Exactly.
She's really arrogant. She's got a lot of the what's in her bloodline is in this character at this point. That's what I can see now what they're doing. They're giving her that. This is one of the Noldor that rebelled against the Valar, refused their summons, went to Middle-earth to fight Morgoth just because he stole some jewels. Do you know what I mean? Which, you know, in the grand scheme of things, why is that important? Got so many people killed, ruined an entire continent. Do you know what I mean? These are all the things that happened. Although she wasn't directly involved in an incident called the Kinslaying, which was probably the worst thing that happened that her family did, she ended up really being against the other members of her family because of that, and became direct rivals of them, you know, and they ended up crossing over the very northern wastes, like a way up, even further up than where Galadriel is looking for Sauron, so even further north than that, you know. They ended up having to cross over there because there was no boats, and tons of elves died in the way over because it was so hard, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they would just have to be left, and the rest would have to carry on, do you know what I mean?
Through the mountains.
Yeah, it's a kind of one of those types of things, and I think, you know, because of that, she is this. I mean, like, people complained in episode one that she was leaving somebody behind when they were getting, you know, caught behind. This is somebody who crossed the hell cracks and did that very thing with thousands of people that were probably in her own family. That's the, I think they're making her super willed and, you know, and arrogant. I think she is arrogant, and she thinks that, you know, because she can say, I'm from the Golden House of Finarfin, you know, I'll put a rah in there for good measure, Finarfin. And, you know, that this is all going to make the Numenoreans go, ooh, it's Galadriel from the Golden House of Finarfin. Okay, missy, what would you like? Do you want our, would you like us to throw our bodies at you? And she, again, it's the way an elf thinks as well. Oh, but your people helped us against Morgoth before. You were loyal people. Your reward of getting Numenor was partly because you were faithful to the Valar, you know what I mean, and you didn't side with Morgoth. But what she forgets is that, well, realistically, this is, if we go by the books, this is 3,000 years later, but, you know, maybe it's 500 to 1,000 years if, by the show, right? And none of those people were alive back then.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what we're seeing. It's that story that we're seeing playing out in Numenor, that people are anti-elf. They're a bit like, let's, you know, keep Numenor for Numenor. You know, it's all it's almost that kind of, they're in this mode. America was pre-World War II, where it was, we're going to be isolationist. You know, I mean, and stay away from everybody else. And you can argue the benefits are. Or we're not getting
don't
any
get
real
me
war.
Started. Don't get me
no,
started.
No, I'm not wanting to get any messing, real war politics because. Because the MO, if you like, of what's going on is completely different in Tolkien's world, because there is a god, you know, there is deities that are trying to help people and that are setting paths for people that they're kind of supposed to follow. So it's a completely different situation from what we would find ourselves in the real world. But it's the same idea that they're at this point want to be an isolationist kind of nation. And we're kind of seeing that that's what. Will we just go spoiler alert now and just get into spoilers?
You want to get into the spoilers? Where are we starting? Here in Numenor?
Well, we may as well start with Numenor.
All right. Let's talk about the let's talk about the wave that's coming towards them. Some people might not remember from history lessons via the movies. Or books. Some people are like me, have not read the books themselves.
I mean, if
in
you've only
decades,
watched the Lord of the Rings films, you wouldn't know. What
might
happened,
not even
would you?
Know any of this. Yeah. So, Numenor is going to flood, and it's is it when the the pillars come down before this, right? Or is, because you said the pillars are supposed to still be up. Does the
what pillars? Sorry,
the ones that hold up the freaking lights in the.
Am I saying it right? No. So at this point, there's a sun and a moon. We don't know. They do go around, right?
Right.
They do go around. So they're astral bodies at this point. They're actually the Maya, both Gandalf-like beings that float about, right? So, but what we don't know is at this point, if it's a flat Earth that they travel around, or whether they've made it a globe that goes around. Like Tolkien, right up to his last days, was working notes where he made it. So there was always a sun and moon. Do you know what I mean? Because I think he started to realize, I don't know if this flat Earth thing is going to work, but we don't really have any completed. So it's a, and you and I both said we think they'll just do round Earth. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And it'll make it easier that way. So that's what I think they'll do. But ultimately, I think I don't want to give kind of spoilers, you know, for what's going to come, because I think there's going to be a climax, I think, about season four, which is going to... But I think you know, if you've watched the movies, that there's no Numenor anymore, right? Mm-mm. Where is it in The Lord of the Rings? It doesn't exist, right?
Yep.
So we know that there's an event coming. How we get there, I won't obviously go into any kind of details on, because that would be major, major spoilers for how this show is going to plan out. But I think you can see that Muriel is having a potential, a vision of, at this point, a potential future that could happen. And obviously they will be wanting to do their best to avoid that.
Says when she touches the Sight Stone is, hey, these visions aren't necessarily set in stone.
And that's true, because, again, you've got free will to take into account, you know. So, you know, this could be what happens if certain decisions are made and if certain things happen. Now, in the lore, those things do, those events do happen, but they didn't need to necessarily go that way. Right. There's lots of things, all these characters that we see would have been able to do differently at times, which would have stopped this. I mean, if Elrond just stopped, told Durin, go back to Khazad Dûm, we're abandoning this project, that would kind of at least delay things for a long, 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 long time.
Without right that forge being...
Before you even get there, right? Yeah. If Numenor had, you know, had stayed in contact with the elves and stayed friends with them, instead of kind of becoming a little bit... What happens is they become jealous of them, because Numenoreans live much longer than normal humans do.
Right.
So maybe hundreds of years, even not necessarily the nobles, but they become...
But humans also get to disconnect and...
Yeah, well, but they don't see that. I mean, who does? Like, if now, would you say, do you want to live forever or do you want to die? Do you know what I mean? And have no idea. Like, maybe you're a theist, right? So you've got faith that there's an afterlife.
Yes.
But if somebody doesn't have that, why would you want to give up the only thing that is your own conscious?
Yeah.
You know, that's difficult. But then you would have the questions of, would you really want to live forever? And there's loads of stories explore that and how it might not be the best thing.
Yeah.
You know, all of that sort of stuff as well. So, but that at this point, Numenoreans are kind of, they've become jealous that the elves get to live forever and they don't, you know, and they think, why is this? This isn't fair, you know. And that's one of the reasons they stopped kind of being friends with them, which I think they'll get into eventually in the show. But, you know, a lot of the themes of this age are people being prideful and doing what they, you know, being ambitious and doing the wrong things, and those wrong things, you know, having dire, dire consequences. That's a lot of what's going on. So I think there's a lot of mistakes to be made left, and we see some of that foreshadowing. Anything else you wanted to talk about as respects to Numenor itself? I mean, the tree losing that was a cool...
Well, yeah,
right?
that was a cool effect, and that's from the dream. She mentions, the Queen Regent mentions, whoops, that is not me, that is you. I need to fix that button. There we go. The queen talks about how that's to be seen as a sign of the Valar crying, like it's their tears that Numenor's doing the wrong thing, going astray. And
bear in mind, we know this is the same white tree that we have in Lord of the Rings that yes. doesn't flower anymore until Aragorn yes. becomes king again. So it's a magical tree, if you like. You know, it mm-hmm. isn't just a normal tree. It is connected to that whole union between the Numenoreans and the elves and the gift from the Valar. You know, they gave them that tree to yep. as a sort of seedling to grow in Numenor. And I think it's a cutting or as a seed of a tree that was from Valinor itself. Do you know mm-hmm. what I mean? So it is special and there is this connection there. So that is a really big portent for them when they see the leaves falling. And you just see Elendil and Miriel look at each other and there's just this, yep. oh, fuck. Do you know what I mean?
We make the wrong
should
choice.
Not be sending Galadriel away. You're fucked yep. up, you know? And I'm not sure necessarily all the Numenoreans will see it that way. I think Farazon is definitely playing a game at the moment in terms of what he wants to happen. And at the moment, he's playing that he's quite loyal to the Queen. But I think, you know, there may be some changes in the way he yeah. views things from Miriel and that. And there is this almost a reluctance to admit you're one of the faithful, that you're an elf friend at this point, yeah. because it's not deemed a good part
it's
of society.
Popular.
You yeah. know? It's I just exactly loved the popular. Way they brought all that in, and the imagery was so cool, you know. It was just it was a really powerful scene, you know, just these leaves falling and the understanding of what that actually means. And they did good for the casual fans because they explained it at the start, you know. So they yeah. it wasn't just for the nerds, it was, you know, they explained it and then showed the importance of it when it does happen later on.
Yep. It's all good. I liked it. It's fun. Like I said, I get confused sometimes because I've got touches of Appendices and Silmarillion and even wiki pages from when I was like, last time I watched the movies, I don't remember we watched them in 20 or 21, but sometime in the last couple of years, we watched the extended cuts. I don't think Christine had ever seen them or for some ungodly reason, we watched.
I think the extended cuts are better.
Actually, they are, but it is a
long.
It's a long haul. So
I wouldn't want to watch them all in one go.
No, you know? It took us two days.
Return of the King is almost 4 hours.
Yeah, it took us 2 days. So. We watched two on one day, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, and then Return of the King.
But unlike,
on the next day,
Justice League, maybe where you just think, oh, they could have cut this down. It still feels like, compared to the books, it still feels like they've cut loads out of the extended editions because there's so much there, you know, and yeah. it can add a lot. But anyway.
So I've got those things where I'm like, you know, I ask you about the pillars crumbling and when places disappear underwater and things like that. I don't remember all the orders of events. You know, I don't remember when it goes from flat to round or when yeah. the trees stop being the source of stuff.
Well, you start off with lamps and then you go yep. from lamps to trees. So the lamps were these two big pillars that like that's probably
have
in
my mind.
So
yep.
they go even this before is, the yeah. elves. They've done in before even the elves get born. Yeah. You know what I mean? So the elves only have experienced the light of the trees, which was trees. Step two, and then yep. step three was sun and moon, if you like.
Yep. So I dig all that. The other part to kind of discuss, I guess, would be let's talk orcs and the humans down in the Southlands.
Yeah.
Adar. I like I love it when people have so I mentioned last week how much I enjoyed the orcs because of the similarities to the Shadow of War, Shadow of Mordor games,
mm-hmm.
Which a lot of people enjoy. I know a lot of people that really enjoyed those games, not necessarily just for story or, but it was good Lord of the Rings content, albeit a little off in story. It was fun.
My only issue with the games at the moment in regards to this show is there's a lot of people claiming that Celebrimbor, is gay compared to the Celebrimbor of the games, and you're like, that's the real Celebrimbor.
Yeah, and it's an action adventure game, but yeah. the orcs are really cool, and they gave them more personality than they had in the Lord of the Rings movies. Someone made a fun like deep fake of Gandalf critiquing Lord of the Rings, and he made a joke, and I don't know if he finds it a real critique or if he's literally looking for things, but he's like, why are all the orcs Cockney? And I'm like, man, that's, it's just like the games, man. And that's like asking, why is Guy Ritchie's, you know, street criminals all speaking Cockney in his movie? I mean, come on, dude, it fits. It fits the character type, and they used it before in a beloved game. And I picked up on that. I'm happy with that, because outside of the books, we don't have anything that builds on anything about orcs. The movies treat them like Marvel treats Ultron's army for the most part.
One thing that they wouldn't do, those, but Tolkien insinuated that, you know, that the trolls and orcs would swear a lot, and he didn't like swearing, you know, but he basically said in his book, I wouldn't translate that into the book, because why give their filthy language?
Yeah.
More kind of what way, but I expect them not to do that, obviously, or in the films, you know, because, you know, and they have swearing orcs and stuff like that. But I like it was, that they kind of make them, it's like almost like Wharton Man's accents, if you like, you know, because it's, you know, it's the taking the language and twisting it in the way it wasn't intended, which is, Tolkien was a bit of a perfectionist, and the language was his thing. He was a language professor, that was his whole big kind of shtick, if you like. So, you know, I kind of like it.
So I dug that. The sword, the hilt that, you know, they were looking for. We mentioned that in our first episode of a review of 1 and 2. Why do I have that set for 10? Anyways, I enjoyed all of that. Then getting to meet Adar. Let's talk about Adar. What do you think is, what are some Easter eggs that others may have missed, but without spoiling or whatever? I mean, you want to talk about the guy.
Spoil, because I don't think this would get mentioned, but I think there's a lot of people think it could be Maglor, who is one of the sons of Fëanor and quite a famous elf from the First Age. But his life did get very dark. And the last thing Tolkien wrote about him was that he finally got hold of one of the Silmarils that his family swore an oath that they would never stop and never, no obstacle would ever be enough, which they then used to rationalize evil deeds, right?
Right.
And kind of, he kidnapped like Elrond and Elros and held them kind of hostage at one point. Now, they actually became, he liked them and kind of treated them quite well in the end. There was almost a little bit of a redemption arc kind of happens there with that character, but, you know, they really were kind of held hostage because their dad had one of the Silmarils, you know, and it was like they would do anything to get the Silmaril. And finally, Maglor, by this time, two of the Silmarils are lost forever because Elrond's dad never comes back. They tell you that in this episode. He goes west and he never comes back. Now he's flying about, you know, with a Silmaril on his brow, and he's a star because it's so bright, right? That's the whole kind of story that's going on there. But Maglor does get one of the Silmarils, and when he grasps it in his hand, it burns him severely in the same way that it burned Morgoth to touch them. And that's because the Silmarils have been hallowed by the Valar. So like an evil or unpure thing can no longer touch them.
It's holy and it water shows or cross that, to a vampire. Yes,
right. And it shows how far he's fallen. And he casts it into the sea, and that's the last one going forever. It's in the depths of the sea, and he just wanders away and is never heard from again in Middle Earth. And Maglor, the way he talked about, you know, being from Beleriand, we know he was a First Age elf. He's dark haired, like Maglor would be.
He's got burns,
scars, and stuff, which kind of make you think he's been, because elves heal up quite quickly, so it has to be something quite dark that's happened to something to scar an elf. And he also is wearing a kind of glove in only one hand, and that makes me think that was the hand that was burned by the Silmaril. That's really good. Well.
And you could also think the light and the heat, or you know, the energy from holding it, if it's going to burn his hand, it could potentially burn It could be that, but he was involved
against battles against dragons, sure, Balrogs, yeah, you know, things that can, you know, people weigh magic blades like the one that we're seeing in the Southlands, you know, that's not going to be something new to a character, yeah, like him. And he did a lot of bad shit, you know what I mean? So he could just be completely... he's gone the other way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought it was quite nice the way that, like, when the orc was dying, it was almost like a, I'm going to put you out of a misery. This is a shame for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I wonder. I saw it coming too. I was like, he's gonna end this guy's suffering and maybe some ritual with it. No ritual happened, but yeah, it was cool. I mean,
humanized the orcs, but it gave them, as you said, like, in the games, maybe done a lot more, give them some character, you know. They're still kind of soulless beasts, but somebody cares.
It makes it, and you know, the sympathetic moment is great for what they're doing with the story, but even without that, I mean, think about just the little conversations that they have, the talking between each other, the taunts at their prey. I mean, all of that is added entertainment. No one talks about the Ultron drones. No one talks about the Chitauri warriors. There's no standout anything in the background of just
the enemies
like that
to be defeated.
Yeah, yeah.
And then put the guy in a different sleeping costume and put him in the next battle.
And here you get just enough of some character to it that you could almost see yourself remembering an orc, you know, not necessarily that I've met one that 100%, other than the chief and the water thing, because that was just great. That was a cool moment. But you can almost get to remember, and that's added entertainment. It's an extra layer that wasn't even truly necessary. They did it anyways. Thank you guys.
And it also backs up everything that we kind of thought, that they're looking for that sword. I think that was pretty apparent to anyone, but they really want that sword, and I think it's Adar that wants that sword, and I think he might think that if he claims that he can become the next Morgoth, if you like, and at the moment he's kind of got that place himself. And I wonder if Sauron will have to get rid of Adar before he can take over, or whether Adar will bow down to Sauron and say, you know, you're my master now. I'm not so sure that would be the case, you know, given the way they're kind of going with this. So I wonder if Adar might be someone who we have to see dead at some point before the real story can, the real bad guy can kick in, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. That's just a theory. Because Adar's kind of not a character that was ever talked about in the lore,
right.
So we can't really say what's going to happen to him or not.
The stuff with the boy, you know, and the bartender or chef or whoever the old man was that has used the hilt as well. I mean, again, foreshadowing Sauron and
his minions. What it seems is there's definitely some people in that are still loyal to
loyal to him.
Sauron, and, who was a lieutenant of Morgoth, and
So it completely makes that whole situation tense, because you've got, you know, mom and elf, you've got this boy who's now got a taste for something that he doesn't understand but is powerful, and it adds to the drama and tension of what would relatively just be a boring people on the run story, you know, especially when you have the Harfoots, which we didn't get to see this episode at all, which is fine. I like how they're, even though we didn't see them, I didn't feel like I missed them.
No.
And I don't mean it in a bad way. I mean,
no,
like,
I don't know.
I'm still interested to see Meteor Man and stuff.
I'm okay with them, but
yeah, it's mostly I want to see what's going on with Meteor Man, but I wasn't like upset that it wasn't in there. But they're balancing that well, and adding these extra elements also helps build the world a little bit more with humans and Sauron versus, you know, humans and elves versus we haven't even really seen humans and dwarves interact yet, and maybe we'll get to some of that. I'm not sure, but Yeah, it's cool, man. And I forget the elf's name that we're following there. The one in not everyone, but the one some people have their knickers in a twist about.
Arundel.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
It's in the show so far.
It was interesting.
I think he's really good actor.
He does carry a presence. We haven't gotten a whole lot of like he's wordy stoic. Interactions, he's which is stoic. Fine. Exactly. That's what I was going to say.
He's a good actor because you can see what's going on in his face.
Exactly. And I'll give him a hell of a lot of credit for that. The scene where he's debating whether or not to attack Adar, you know, and he takes the risk of, let me, you know, if I attack him, I don't get away. The
and
humans
plus,
die.
This isn't an orc. He's trying to attack, so he's weighing that up as well, because Adar knows where he's holding him and still sitting right in front of him. So he's ready for that if that happens, you know, and fighting another elf means he's probably just in fact older and more experienced, I would think, by far than Arandir is.
So I dug all of that. All in all, I'm happy with the stories that they are telling. We've got the three big ones, the elves and humans in the Southlands, Elrond and dwarves, and then Galadriel's thing. Two out of three seem pretty good. You ready to talk a couple of minutes about that third one, Elrond?
Yeah. I mean, this was a scene that almost kind of made me a little bit emotional when I was watching it. And you know, I just think Elrond and Durin are one of the best pairs that we've got in this show so far. I just love every time they're on screen. I just think it's so interesting. Like the way they show how elf ears and eyes work a little bit differently, you know. I'm kind of almost, did Durin know that Elrond would hear him? Do you know what I mean? There's almost, I'm not sure about that, even in the back of my mind at that point, do you know what I mean?
I didn't know about the hearing. I figured maybe hit the wrong button. Maybe he was reading lips. I don't know.
He heard should her. Be able to hear that if he's concentrating on it. He could hear that. Yeah, elves have like super hearing, super vision.
Well, yeah, I just didn't know. That's a big echoey hollow mountain. You know, that's.
There's maybe
that's
a bit
intense.
Of that and the lips as well. Maybe he's using both.
Yeah, that's kind
of
how I was.
Conjunction,
taking
I don't
it,
know.
And we're hearing it for audience sake, you know?
Yeah, because we cut to them and then back to Elrond as well, you know? So,
it's interesting.
That was cool. And then,
I don't know all of these interactions in any type of depth, you know? Elrond is. Like I said, I haven't read the books since school, and I'm almost 40. I turned 38 here in a few months. So all of my memories of Elrond really are the movies, you know, and stuff with he was in The Hobbit, right? In the book too of The Hobbit, right?
In all the books they make a stop in Rivendell at some point
and
to get some advice from Elrond.
That's all I've gotten in my mind. But so I don't know if I feel at this point elves are always up to something, just like Durin even says. But I don't know necessarily if Elrond is up to something himself or if he's just part of someone else's something, which is what
I don't think he fully understands what because Celebrimbor hasn't explained what he's doing yet, has he? He's just, you know,
I need your
help
to get this
forge, and he's the most famous smith and a direct, you know, descendant of Feanor, you know, and he's got some idea. Why would you, you know? And it's not as if Celebrimbor's got bad intentions. He doesn't, you know. That's not what's going on here.
No.
We'll have to wait and see how he's being influenced. But anyway, you know, so I think there is. I think when Durin says to, you know, his dad that he feels that there's something else going on, I think he's right, but trust Elrond, I don't think.
Yeah.
And what I love was, like, you know,
he doesn't trust who
he Elrond makes
Elrond
trusts. Take an oath. And really what sounds like a proper oath that the dwarfs, you know, think is something that they genuinely, you know, believe in. Tolkien always, you know, in his writings, you know, be wary of the oaths you make, because they have a way of coming back to haunt you, and that they will, if you break them, even unintentionally, you know, there's no, oh, well, in this technicality, I didn't actually break the oath. There's none of that shit in Tolkien's world.
There's no lawyers.
And the fact that he gave, which I think was stupid of him, he gave Elrond the Mithril away from them, I think that's going to end up in Celebrimbor's hands.
Yeah.
And they're going to think, oh, this is cool. We could make rings out of this. You know, this could be the material that we use. Maybe some of the rings are made out of Mithril. I don't know. I don't know if they ever kind of clarified. The One Ring wasn't, but I don't know if they can ever kind of clarify that. So, you know, I could see how Elrond is going to break that oath to Durin, but not intentionally. It's just going to happen, like he leaves it somewhere. Celebrimbor picks it up. Oath broken. Do you know what I mean? And what drama is that going to cause kind of down the road for them all? I mean, that's powerful stuff, I think. So
now, he did say Elrond must not speak a word of it. So if it accidentally falls into someone else's hands,
again, and you're getting into technicalities because
the oath said speak. I'm lawyering it on purpose. Funny,
it's not the legal terms of it. It's how the characters react to it. Durin reacts in a way as if Elrond broke it. That's the most important thing, you know.
Yeah, like I said, I was just trying to be funny.
Don't worry about it, buddy. Then it doesn't really mean anything, and I don't think that's what they're going to do.
And the funniest thing about the Mithril is when they brought him down, and this is a sign of two things. One, the proliferation of that material in pop culture, because every Final Fantasy game I've ever played has Mithril armor, weapons, and things like that. They're early, they're not super powerful, but they're more powerful than like your starting dagger or something, right? When they go down there and they're looking at the ore, and I'm like, what glows like that? And then he's like, this is a new ore. I looked at Christine, no joke, I said, Mithril. Like, it just clicked. Like,
makes sense, doesn't it?
That's where it would be found, and who would find it if it's that exciting to be something new.
I don't think Tolkien ever really
gave it like a history or
Mithril
anything.
Was first discovered in the year, you know, if he did, maybe, again, there's people that have got better knowledge than me, so maybe there'll be a first time he mentioned that, I don't know. But what we do know is that the just from the Lord of the Rings films and the books, this lines in as well, that the fortune of Khazad Dûm was Mithril, not gold and jewels. You know, that's kind of where they got it from. And I really love that they're bringing it in as a kind of almost part of the story, is the discovery of Mithril and how that's going to shape things, you know, because, you know, eventually once we get to Seven Dwarf Lords, Seven Rings and all that sort of stuff, do you know what I mean? There's going to be a lot of fun to be had there. And the way that they're kind of setting almost Durin's, he's eager to go and get it despite the risk, and his dad's kind of like, whoa, let's, you know, do this safely and properly. Yeah. You know, this is new. We don't know what we're doing. We have to get this right. And that's kind of the Dwarven way, is don't rush in, you know, in some ways, take your time. Like, they'll spend like 100 years, as Gimli would say, tapping a tiny bit of rock to get it perfect so that it doesn't crumble, you know, rather than rush a job. That's the skill of a dwarf. So I just kind of, the way they're building it all up, the show just really, all the elements came together for me this week in terms of the stories that they're telling. I'm not sure where the Harfoot story's going, I must admit.
Who the Meteor Man is.
And how, but I have a theory that we saw two meteors, but we've only met one character. And I think we are going to get, I think they're going to be the Blue Wizards. And I think the coordinates he's looking for are where the other meteor went.
Right.
Because people have been talking about, even in a flat Earth, that where they saw some of those characters geographically, and around Earth it's even worse, but on a flat Earth even then they were saying, well, it would be further away than where that person see it. So there's a lot of theories now that there was actually 2 meters at the same time, and that would be pretty cool if that's the way that story's going. And I don't know where they're going to go with that, but you know, I'm intrigued about that, but I'm loving the way that they're building up the plot of how this is all going to work going forward. Yep.
Before we wrap it up, the last thing I had wanted to say about Durin and Elrond stuff, besides the conversations amongst Durin, his wife, and Elrond, the good touching father son moment between Durin and his dad,
which comes off of the story Elrond tells him. Basically, I could never get to see my dad,
Exactly, and as fathers ourselves with sons, that is a way to touch it. And then as far as like that whole idea of losing dads and stuff, I've had to face those types of fears. I've had my dad go away for long periods of time as well. So really good touching human universal moment there, Amazon.
Yeah. And one last thing I'd just like to mention in terms of Easter eggs, that there was some even more cool shit that appeared in. See, when they went to see the King of Numenor, there was like old relics there, which you could point to say those were old Gondolin relics and stuff like that, like stuff from the King Tuor. And we also saw Narsil there. You remember Narsil? It ends up, it's the sword that was broken. It ends up cutting the ring off Sauron's hand. That sword, almost the same design, was sitting there as well at that point. So that was, there was a lot of cool little Easter eggs in that scene for the very keen-eyed fan, if you kind of look about. We didn't even talk about the Palantir. Oh, can I just quickly say my one criticism? One criticism is very minor, but for the Palantir, the fact that they said like they've only got one and the other ones are lost, I'm a bit like, it's too early for that. You know what I mean? Like, so the whole point was that they brought three of them over to Middle-earth, and the other, I think there's seven in total, the other four were like, could be four they brought over, and some of them were destroyed in Numenor, but they weren't lost at that point. The Numenoreans actually started using them in different parts of Middle-earth to keep an eye on things, but they got them. It was part of the gift that they got, even though it was Feanor that made them. They got these Palantiri, and there was seven of them. So it's a bit strange for them to say they're all lost bar this one at the moment. I don't know where they're going with that. Maybe they'll make the discovery of them part of the show. I don't know, but I found that a little bit strange.
I might be wrong, but isn't Saruman use one of those things, or is that a different site?
That's the one that ends up. So I mean, that's where the Numenoreans build Orthanc. Right, it's them that build Orthanc later on in the Third Age, and they put a seeing stone there. The other one, which is we see, is Denethor uses, which is in Gondor itself. Mm-hmm. So there's one of them. But Sauron has the one that used to be in Minas Ethel, which is now Minas Morgul. Sauron has that one, you know, and that at this point Sauron doesn't have any Palantir, do you know what I mean? So we need to at least get to a point where we have three of them, and we've only got one at the moment. That didn't quite make sense to me. So maybe
they don't know where they are. They're gonna have someone
maybe
else
that'll become
have them
part of it. That they'll find them or something. Yeah, I don't know.
All right, well, Cam, it was great conversation, man. It's been a pretty good show so far.
Good. I'm glad as not a huge Tolkien fan you're liking it, because I'm not a huge fantasy fan either, really. So, you know,
not even a huge live action fan anymore for Western media.
But you must admit, this is pretty. I know there were some issues with the CGI last week.
What was the young guy that talks to Isildur's sister? Isildur's sister, that guy, why did he look like an extra for a Roman set instead of Lord of the Rings. That was awful costume choices. The white with the gold and the red.
It did look a bit Roman.
It was very, very Hollywood Roman. So
yeah, whereas the rest of them are a bit more colorful. Like Farazon's all in blue. Yeah, like, I wonder whether they kind of represent power in some sense, but colors I don't know. But then Arian was in blue, so.
I don't know, but it ripped me out of Middle Earth for a moment. And if you wanted my attention on him, you got it, but for the wrong reason, because it just straight invoked Rome. I mean,
him and the Arian character are both made up for this show, so we don't know how their stories end.
Okay.
I could guess, but I would like to do that at this point.
All right. Guys, check out LRMonline.com every day for all entertainment news, needs, and opinions. We've got a lot of great things going up, including written reviews and celebrity interviews on the LRM YouTube channel. Speaking of the YouTube channel, if you're watching us, go ahead and hit that red subscribe button. Thanks to all 494 subs so far. Help us break that 500 if you like the content. We have a lot more varied things, including trailer and anime reactions. We have an anime review series, AVR. We have the Cantina and Marvel Multiverse Mayhem, which handle Star Wars and Marvel news and reviews respectively, Andor starting this upcoming week, and She-Hulk still unfortunately going on, but also Daily Cup of Genre and Breaking Geek Radio for all your other entertainment news and analysis, opinions, and random conversations. Podcasts go up on all your favorite podcast apps, also now on Sounder, so if you use Sounder, we are there and distributing through them, so that's cool. Guys, that's it, Cam.
Yeah, see you all next week, everyone. We'll be back for episode 5. Hope it's as good as episode 4 was, but even if it's not, I'm still positive. So come back next week and me and Kyle will let you know what we thought of episode 5. Thanks for watching. Bye.
Bye.
Lucky Land Slots, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.